This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and one of the fun days on the podcast here for me, if I can call it a fun day, it's one of those realities of life, and podcasting allows you to do this a little bit, you know, okay? The wife is downstairs. My wife is the state director of the Virginia chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. She's got a conference call, important conference call to go through, so leading some folks through some fundraisers that she's putting on later this fall. And, well, what that means is, you know, we work out of a home office. We're very fortunate to be able to do so. The five dogs in our house are my responsibility right now. It's also podcast time. So if you hear barking, if you hear some growling, hopefully the dogs don't chew on my podcast microphone cord. And in fact, as I say that, one tried to do so. You know, hopefully we'll get through this. This will be fun. And so looking forward to a good podcast today. We're going to talk, as the headline on the podcast today indicated, we're going to talk about some behind the scenes of what it's like to do a ESPN college football broadcast. You know, I've talked about this with a couple of friends who, you know, knew that I did my first college football game for ESPN this past weekend, the VMI Catawba game. You know, I told them all, you know, they had questions. I answered the questions, told them about what the situation was like, what the whole day was like, really. And got the suggestion, hey, that'd be a fun thing to tell people about on a podcast. I bet a lot of people want to know what it's like behind the scenes of an ESPN college football broadcast. Now, yeah, I didn't do Oklahoma, Ohio State. You know, I'm not doing USC, Stanford. You know, I'm not doing games like that. I'm VMI Catawba. It's a college football game. It was a thrilling game, actually. Catawba, Division II school, pulls off a 27-20 upset with a touchdown pass in the final minute of the game. So exciting game, certainly for Wade Branner with the play-by-play, my broadcast partner and I, to do for 3 hours plus on a Saturday afternoon. I mean, just, gosh, in America, if you're a college football fan, there's nothing better than a Saturday afternoon at a stadium, right? You know, and for me, you know, I'm wearing a suit and tie, and I'm sitting up in the box and best seat in the house, and being able to tell people about it, that's even better than best. So, no, I'm not going to complain at all about anything, but I'm just telling you, yeah, I'm not doing, I don't want to sell myself as being big time. I'm certainly not big time. I'm the opposite of big time. So there we go. But that said, you know, yeah, I'm, you know, for a lot of y'all out there listening, probably the only guy you know, in a sense, who's, you know, been behind the scenes of a broadcast as one of the color commentators, in a sense, for me, color commentator. So what is it like? What do you do? One of the questions I got asked was, what do you do to get ready? And I'll say honestly, what I do to get ready is watch a lot of football. So there you go. Right now, you're listening to this podcast. Step one, you've got that covered, right? You watch a lot of football. So I watch a lot of football. Now, that includes, I mean, I watch as much on TV as I can because obviously that's the easiest way to watch football. Even when I'm not doing a game broadcast, I'm trying to get out and watch games live because there is a difference watching a game live and watching it on TV. And it's, you know, subtle but noticeable if you get the live TV, the live game experience, the live no TV experience in a stadium. Especially for me, luckily, I get to sit in press boxes. When I'm not doing a game for ESPN, I am in a press box, usually you know, covering UVA football or some other college football. And so, you know, TV is limited. The camera can only show you so much, right? The camera can only generally follows the quarterback. Obviously, that's where the ball is. The camera follows the ball. But that's not where the play always is. And so, you know, sitting in a press box, generally around the 50-yard line, elevated just perfectly, you know, you get to watch what you really want to look for. And often the play is not where the ball is. The play is where the blocking is, where, you know, maybe you can see the development of a wide receiver screen before TV viewers would. You know, you can see how the defense is aligned. You can't always see that, again, on the screen of a TV because, you know, the picture's usually pretty tightly packed. You get the offensive line. Maybe you can see the receivers flanking on either end. You see the running backs, And the defensive line and the linebackers, you're not always seeing – usually you're not seeing the safeties and cornerbacks and where they're aligned. So you know, yeah, the first week I was in the press box for UVA's game with Wayne and Mary. I was really testing myself as much as possible. Don't watch the ball. Watch what else is going on. Maybe pick out a particular player where you think the ball might be – or a particular player or zone where you think the ball might be going on a run. Again, watch that defense, see how they're aligned. Now, where TV does help, and of course, again, you can only watch in person so much, right? You can only go to – I mean, generally, you're going to see one game on a Saturday. And so the rest of the week, you can watch as much, especially through the Watch ESPN app. Very helpful. There were 100 games, literally 100 exactly games. Broadcast last week by ESPN from that Oklahoma-Ohio State game all the way down to my VMI Catawba and some other games involving 1AA and Division II teams. And so there's a chance to just to turn on a game, not necessarily have to watch all 3 hours of a particular game, 3 hours plus of a particular game, but when I'm watching, I'm trying to watch with quality. I'm trying to, I'm not watching for enjoyment as much as I'm watching for analytics. I'm trying to guess along with situation, down and distance. What play calls do certain teams use? What looks lead to certain plays? What defensive schemes work against certain sets, and things of that nature? And so, you know, I can watch, for me at least, when I'm preparing, I can watch. In fact, I will watch several different games on ESPN3, the Watch ESPN app. After a week's over, leading into the next week, to try to get a feel for just as much football as possible, right? So I can see, see what other what many teams are doing, what things work. The more football you see, the more things are going to pop up in a game that you're then doing live. That makes sense. You know, you've seen it before, so to speak. So there's a lot of game study. Not necessarily involving just the teams you're getting ready to call or watching that week either, but across the board. So I try to do as much of that as I can. And again, I'm sure you're sitting out there thinking, man, I could be good at this. You know, I could really be. I watch a lot of football. I love to watch football. So me too. This is what I've I've done this kind of game prep as a journalist for a number of years, and now I'm getting to translate it right to a degree. With my work with ESPN and ESPN3, so that's leading up to a game. In fact, I woke up Saturday morning. Kickoff for our game, the VMI Catawba game, was a 1:30 kickoff. I woke up at 6 o'clock. Wanted to get my workout in for the day, so I got an hour and 15 minutes on the elliptical. And during that hour and 15 minutes, I was still watching more. In fact, I queued up the first half of VMI's Week 1 game out at Air Force. Just to refresh myself with VMI's personnel, both offensively and defensively, what they do schematically, both sides of the ball. And that was not a good performance, to say the least, from VMI. They lost that game 62-0. Didn't have the ability to watch anything from Catawba, being a Division II school. They weren't on TV the first week. But then after the workout was over, shower, getting ready for the trip down to Lexington, about an hour-long drive for me from Waynesboro, my home near Charlottesville. It was a chance. I took the chance to just refresh myself on Catawba, what they do in terms of their personnel, reading as much about Catawba's program as I could. And then I pop in the car and head down. So I got down early, about 11 o'clock, again, about 2.5 hours in this case before kickoff. And the first thing we do at the stadium, of course, you're getting set up, you're getting situated in your booth. Not exciting stuff there. But our first responsibility, about an hour and a half before the game, roughly 12 o'clock for us before a 1:30 kickoff, our job is to get together with the producer on site and cameraman, and we do our what seems to be live open. It's actually taped about an hour and a half before the game. And the preview that you see where we talk about the key players from VMI, the key players from Catawba, and Wade and I had worked out ahead of time what we wanted to say. There's no script, though. I mean, it's all it's all right off the top of the head. You know, you've done all this game prep already, so it should flow out naturally. But I'll be honest, you know, I did a 3.5, it was roughly, not quite 3.5 hour, about 3 hour 15, 3 hour 20 minute broadcast on Saturday, and that roughly 90 seconds was the only part that I worried about. Just because it's the open, it's the first thing you see. You know, I took a film class in college, and the professor emphasized repeatedly in his lectures that the most important scene in any movie is the first scene. It sets the tone for the rest of the presentation. And so, yeah, that whole drive down, walking around the stadium leading to 12 o'clock when we're getting ready to do that live-to-tape open for the show, for the game, all I'm doing is thinking about those words. And I bet Wade would say something similar. It's very important getting that right, you know, because that sets the tone then, sets your authority, I guess, for the rest of the broadcast. So after we did that, it's roughly 12:15, you know, we did a couple of takes. Actually we did one take live on camera, and that was it. We did a cold take as the crew was setting up the shot and walked through it. And I thought we did a good job with that one, too. And I said to Wade, man, I wish the camera was rolling there. We got that one pretty good. Anybody who's done anything like that, radio or TV-wise, you know that they're oftentimes the first time you go through something like that is the best time, and you don't want to jinx it afterwards, but you can really lose your steam after doing a good take and having to do it a second time or subsequent time. So yeah, after that though, 12:15 or so, I mean, we're just hanging out, because at this point, you know, we've done what we need to do. The hard work then is being done by the production folks, and there's a lot of them: the camera people, the producer, the director, people calling the shots, the graphics people. I mean, there's a whole team of people. You only hear Wade and I, and you know that there's cameras being operated by somebody, but there's a whole room full of people. Even for, you know, quote unquote just VMI Catawba, there's a whole room dedicated to these huge TV screens in this room. There's equipment that I couldn't even imagine how it works in terms of everything that goes on there. One thing different, I've done ESPN College Baseball the last two springs, and we actually have it's a smaller room college baseball wise, so the producer is actually in the room with us, and I can actually hear the producer calling his shots. I can hear him, you know, when a pitcher is looking in for the sign, he'll say, okay, pitcher, camera one, all right, camera two, let's look at the base runner at first base. All right, let's go back to camera one. Okay, now center field, looking back at home plate. I mean, I can hear all that going on. And actually, as a broadcaster, that helps me, because I know, and of course, I'm watching the TV screen too, and I'll talk more about that in a moment. But not only can I see the TV screen, but I can hear what the producer wants in terms of those shots. So I started, you know, after a while of doing this, we've done 20-plus games, college baseball games, over the last two seasons. I really have a feel for where our producer's going with things. So, cue back to Saturday college football. We're not in the same room with producer. Can't hear the shots being called. So, that's something I had to adjust to. But, we got to meet. We did have a person who was our spotter, a man named Randy. Didn't catch Randy's last name, but boy, what a nice guy. A guy who's been doing a spotter's job for about, I'd say back to the mid-1990s from what he told us, so over 20 years. And Randy is someone who says he's worked ESPN with college football, college basketball. He's done NFL games, done some broadcast of high school games that have been done throughout the Mid-Atlantic, and has done so for a long time. So yeah, you know, the job of the spotter is not kind of what you think. If you hear, like, if you listen closely and to a lot of broadcasts, you'll hear the announcers from time to time reference their spotter, and you're thinking, and I thought this too, because with college baseball, you don't need a spotter. You can do the pace of the game is such that you can look up what you need to look up and, you know, that kind of thing on your own. But in a football game, there's so much happening on the field that you need that extra set of eyes in the booth. But I always thought the spotter was the guy that probably sat there and called out the number. Hey, you know, that was pass was to number 88, and the tackles made by number 53, and, you know, maybe threw the names out there to you as well. And because it can, you know, again, it happens so fast, and the numbers in this day and age, especially with all the different fonts that are used and everything else, it can be quick. It can be hard to quickly pick up on who maybe, you know, maybe made a catch. There's a pile of guys on top of that guy, you know, who got up with the ball. Was it 88 or 86? In a split second, you want to make that call and obviously get it right. But that's not what the spotter does. That's still our responsibility. The spotter, though, plays an even more invaluable role than I had assumed. His job back there is to – he's got, it looks like, three or four big, like, three-ring binders full of information. He's got, just like we've got, the stat broadcast in-game stats that are updated not quite second to second from the game action, but very close to that. You know, they're maybe 5 to 7 seconds behind the game action with updated live in-game stats, box scores, et cetera. I mean, player for player stats, the defensive stats, special team stats, offensive stats, everything. I mean, it's all there right in front of us. But also, you know, because we're watching a game and I'm in a lot, Wade's calling out the play, you know, after it's happened, he's telling you what it was. My job is to analyze the play. Their spotter's job is to hand us basically notes of, you know, on this drive, Daz Palmer has carried the ball 4 times for 16 yards. On this drive, you know, the quarterback is 4 for 6 for 62 yards. I mean, whatever the stat may be, and he writes it down, hands a piece of paper to us. While we're talking, we're getting, I mean, it's almost every play. There's sometimes 2 or 3 slips of paper going back and forth every play. As we're talking, good thing there's not a camera on the booth. Because you'd see this constant stream of back and forth. Now, I mentioned I would talk about watching the TV, and that's important. And I bring it up because, you know, there was a much written about, talked about debut for a prominent former head coach, Rex Ryan, who debuted as a game analyst, color commentator on the Monday Night Football broadcast. You know, this, the first week of the season, there's 2 Monday Night Football games, and so there's a second broadcast team. You know, the rest of the season, John Gruden is the color commentator, and Mike Tirico is the play-by-play guy. And I say Mike Tirico. Mike Tirico was the play-by-play guy. I got that wrong now. Why am I forgetting his name? Guy who's done a lot of college basketball at UVA that I've actually had dinner with, and I'm blanking on his name right now. I can see his face. In any case, Rex Ryan debuts, and now he's going to work the rest of the season in ESPN, the ESPN Game Day studio, basically. And Sean McDonough, gotcha. Thank you. I got that. But Ryan's gonna work as a game, as you know, on that desk basically with that group of guys on game day, that, you know, 2-hour pregame show on ESPN, which, you know, you won't notice anything different there. That's your chance to offer opinions, and theoretically, color commentator is also offering opinions. And so why is that any different, right? Well, the difference is that you know, you gotta form your opinions really quickly. There's a play clock in football, as you all know. You, the fans, can get frustrated by that 40-second play clock, but for us in the booth, that 40-second play clock is when we get to talk. And so, and for me as a color commentator, after Wade calls a play out, I've got to think it maybe takes him 5 to 7 seconds as the play is going on to describe the play, get it out there. And then kind of kick to me for my job's a couple fold. It's to tell you, you know, sort of go further than Wade does into telling you what happened, the play-by-play guy does, as to what happened, then maybe tell you why it happened that way, and then if I've got a little bit of sliver of time left, to maybe anticipate what the next play may be. So you've got to do that. I mean, how many plays is from scrimmage are in a game? I don't have committed to memory the number of plays that VMI and Catawba ran, but I do for some reason have the number of plays that UVA and Indiana ran on Saturday, the game later in the day on Saturday, and it was 162. And that's plays from scrimmage. That doesn't include kickoffs. That doesn't include punts. So, you know, you're roughly 170 plays in the game. That's 170 times that you've got to go through and process what you've seen in just a few seconds and then make sense of it that many times. That's a job. I was exhausted by the end of this day. Surprisingly so, I guess. But I was exhausted. I was mentally drained. I could barely drive myself home. I was so tired. So the criticism of Rex Ryan was, well, wow, he wasn't good at telling you what he thought. He was a former head coach. You think he'd be faster at that? Because, of course, coaches have to also process 170 plays a game, right? I mean, they've got to make decisions 170 times a game regarding what plays we run or at least signing off on plays. The head coach doesn't call the plays often for teams, but the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator do. The head coach, at least, is with them, theoretically simpatico on what those play calls are. Can't overrule them at any moment. So he's, you know, obviously the head coach has got to be in that decision-making process all those times as well. But I guess there's a difference between, you know, saying it into a headset and saying it, you know, on the sidelines and saying it into a headset in a booth and having it be entertaining. So my dogs are starting to wonder about my soliloquies here. And also a criticism was that Ryan seemed not to be able to keep up with the replays. And this is one where I'll tell you, that's not as easy as you think. And here's why. The first maybe couple, I think literally maybe the first one and a half baseball games that I did on ESPN two springs ago, I was not good at replays either, to put it bluntly. I had spent 20 years in press boxes watching games and not watching TV. I would, you know, you're there at the game. You're there to watch the live game. And so all of a sudden, there's a TV sitting right in front of you, and yet your eyes tell you to – your eyes and your instinct tell you to watch the actual game. And so I was missing replays all the time, and it was terrible. My job as color commentator is to break down what happened, and I'm not breaking down what happened, at least for you, the viewer. So finally – at some point, maybe between innings, I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously it was in the middle of the game, but Wade said, you got to catch up on these replays. And so what I've taught myself to do in baseball is actually when I'm at a baseball game, you're sitting in a press box right behind home plate, at least at the college games I've done. You're not like at Nationals games where those guys are five stories up literally. I'm sure they rely completely on the TV because the TV is a much better view than what they have in a stadium. But for me, even sitting just relative few feet behind home plate at a college press box, I'm still watching the TV primarily because the TV gives me the view, especially of the strike zone, from behind the center field camera. I can see the ball breaking or not. I can see placement, location, height, width of a pitch. And so the only time I really look at the field then is if a ball is put into play. My eyes can be faster than the camera can be, and certainly faster than the producer and the cameraman can be, in picking the ball up and being able to, you know, sense where things are going to happen and then be able to call things from there. Football, again, I talked earlier about how different it was in one sense. You know, football, you actually, when you're in the stadium, you have an advantage in that you can see much more of a football play with 22 players in the field developing with your naked eye in an open-air stadium than you can on a TV screen where they can't possibly show you all 22 guys and have it mean anything. So, but that said, I think that training in college baseball broadcasting helped me make the transition to college football broadcasting in the sense of knowing to look for the replay and be able to talk through that replay. And sometimes, you know, because, again, we weren't in the same booth as the producer – sometimes I was a little ahead of the replay in terms of my analysis because, you know, I'm just used to that kind of tone, and maybe the producer wanted to get a little bit more of a shot of players getting off a pile or something like that, maybe show a coach before they went to the replay. Maybe it took time to cue up the replay. There is that element too. It's not as automatic as you think either. But for the most part, I mean, my error would be, I think – you know, going back, the only error I would have would be that I was maybe a little ahead of some replays, not behind any. But I don't fault Rex Ryan for that at all. That's not – well, it's not his fault in a sense. I mean, maybe, you know, looking back, ESPN could have had him do either a preseason game or two live, or simply more of the training that I'm sure I would assume that they do at a place like ESPN, where he gets together with Beth Mowins, who was his broadcast partner for Monday Night Football this week, and they stand in a booth and do a sample game together. And even that's hard to do, though. That's not. I don't know how good that. And I start thinking about that because I know that there are broadcast teams that actually do that to get ready for a season. The one difference of that being you're watching a TV the whole time. You're not watching. You know, your eyes aren't darting from a TV screen to the field and back and forth all that time. But that said, you know, yeah, I can definitely understand why Ryan would have had that issue. So the game starts. And here's – I mentioned how drained I was after probably 150, 160 plays of a game. You know, the TV timeouts that you hate at home, those long commercial breaks, we love them in the booth. But not just because we relax. In fact, we're not really relaxing during those TV timeouts, those TV breaks. We're talking. We do have a connection back to where the producer is. We're talking about what the shot coming back from the commercial break is going to be. It's usually a replay of some sort. Then Wade and I are preparing what we're going to be able to say from that replay, and then set up the next play, whether it's a change of possession, maybe a timeout during the middle of a drive. So it's 3rd and 2 to 30. What are they going to do here? But you're even during that break, it's just a little bit of relaxation, but you're still on your game. The only break in the game is halftime, and we don't get at all the same break that you might get at home. You know, I don't know, at home, you know, you might change, flip the channels, you might go out and take the dogs for a walk like I probably need to do now. We get 5 minutes right at the start of halftime, but we come right back from the studio at that 5 minute mark, and we're right back on it, breaking down the game, what you saw at halftime, what adjustments might be made by the two teams heading out in the third quarter, and then it seems like it starts right back up, and then you go through, and I say this, I've done radio football for covering VMI football the last 2 years. That's how I got this gig, doing this VMI game for ESPN this past weekend. I'll do another game next weekend, another VMI game on ESPN3 next weekend. It's, you know, the game time is consistent. Kickoff at VMI games in Lexington is consistent. 1:30 kickoff time. Actually, 1:34 is the kickoff time. Once the game starts around 1:30, once your broadcast starts around 1:30, you're locked in until that game's over. There's, you know, I got to quickly run to the bathroom at halftime. And other than that, for those 3 hours, 20 minutes, it was football, and that's the mentally draining part, because you know you're testing yourself every single play to get it right, to see the play, interpret the play, and communicate what you think you know about the play, about the next play, about what it means for that game. You know that every play, and it's a fun thrill ride, I will say. You know, next weekend's game, hopefully I'll be a little better, and who knows, maybe I'll do some more games this fall. I'm looking to talk my way into doing some college basketball this winter. I know I'll be doing some baseball again in the spring. It's a lot of fun, and it's something that I've been working towards for a long time, and it's really fascinating to, you know, actually see it kind of come to fruition for me here, I guess. And and that said, I have a great appreciation for, even more so now, I think, for all the hard work that everybody behind the scenes of a TV broadcast does. Our job might be among the easiest, and I'm not just saying that to fluff up the hardworking tech people who do all the work, you know, the producers, directors, camera people, graphics people, etc. But, you know, we do three. We're on point for 3 hours, and then we have that little segment at the beginning we tape before a game. Those guys show up. They're there when I get there, and they're there when I leave. Getting set up for the game, getting all the cameras in position, getting everybody acclimated, getting everything wired correctly. I guess you could say, and then getting the graphics ready. Those graphics just don't automatically produce themselves. The player names and numbers and hometowns and all that stuff that you see pop up during the game. It's like flying an airplane, I assume. I've done that flight simulator game on a computer several times. And flying an airplane with everybody and maybe even refueling it in midair a couple times as well. And also makes it difficult, again, it's a sporting event, so who knows what's going to happen, right? So a lot of behind the scenes there. Hopefully I've given you some insight in how it all works. How it all works there is I've been able to learn anyway, and hopefully continue to learn. So it's Wednesday as we're recording this podcast. I want to get together with Scott German a little later this week, and we'll preview the UVA-UConn game this weekend. That's where I'll be on Saturday, not doing any broadcasting this weekend, just live blogging from the press box like I've always done for many years, from the press box at Scott Stadium for UVA home games. So that's a 12 o'clock kickoff on Saturday, and we'll be live blogging. I'll do a pregame and postgame wrap on Facebook in addition to podcast. And, we'll have the game recap, the stats, the transcripts of the press conferences, my columns explaining to you what happened in great detail. And then I'm looking forward to next Saturday the 23rd. VMI will be hosting Chattanooga, preseason top 15 team in FCS football. 0-2 start, a couple losses to FBS programs. Chattanooga taking the hard route out to its two non-conference games early in the season. But Chattanooga, of course, now behind the eight ball a bit there, be in need of a win at VMI to continue a what will be expected playoff push for the Mocs. So that is Saturday, September 23rd at 1:30. I'll be doing that broadcast. And boy, it's college football season. There's a lot worse things in the world to be doing than talking about football, right, on a beautiful late summer, early fall day. Thank you for listening. We'll talk again soon.